It's the Chronicles of Aguna, and we are live.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.
Hello, good evening, and welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by 90 Min. As ever, I'm your host, Harry Simeon, and on this edition of the podcast, we're going to be discussing Arsenal's performance against Olympiacos in the second leg of our UEFA Europa League round of 16 tie. We'll be touching on that. We'll be laughing at Spurs a little bit. We'll be touching on who else progressed in the Europa League this evening ahead of tomorrow's draw. And we'll be discussing various elements of what went on across Europe tonight. Just a quick heads up before I get into it and before I forget, because I shouldn't forget, because they are killing us with kindness. So a massive thank you to the guys over at Manscaped for agreeing to sponsor the Chronicles of Aguna for another period of time. So thank you to Manscaped for their continuous support of the show. If you're interested in any of their products, check them out because their website is full of brilliant stuff. You can get 20% off as well as free shipping by entering the discount code, which is rolling across the bottom of your screen right now, 90min20. So check it out, get involved, see what you like. If there's anything you do like, if your nether regions are in need of some tender loving care, then head over to manscaped.com, check out the website, check out all the products, and use our discount code to get yourself 20% off as well as free worldwide shipping. So there you go. Thank you to Manscaped as always. Right. Before I go on to basically pull apart Arsenal's performance tonight, because it was a terrible performance, right? There's no way in avoiding that. There's no way of getting around that, right? It was a shit Arsenal display on Thursday night. And what I just wanted to say ahead of me pulling apart various elements of it is we're through. So this is that there's going to be criticism. There's going to be discussion off of the back of that performance. But ultimately, Arsenal are through. And we should be delighted. We did enough, it appears, in the first leg to make sure that despite suffering a defeat at the Emirates Stadium, we were still able to get through. So credit to the boys, credit to the lads for that. But yeah, it was look, it wasn't vintage Arsenal tonight by any stretch of the imagination. It wasn't enjoyable to watch. In fact, it was a bloody tough watch. But we're through. And so everything we're going to complain about and moan about and then kind of overanalyze tonight, just take it with a pinch of salt, is the advice I would give you at the top of this show. So here we go. Let's get into it. So, of course, Arsenal beaten by Olympiacos at the Emirates Stadium. And surprise, surprise, who was on the score sheet for the visitors? That man again, Youssef El Arabi. And he scored the decisive goal that dumped us out of the Europa League last year, scored the goal in the Yorgos Karaiskakis Stadium last week, and of course popped up with another one at the Emirates today. And I don't know what it is about the player. You know, you just get some players, don't you, that have a particularly good record against certain opponents. You're talking about a player who just absolutely adores playing against Arsenal, who takes his chances every time he plays against the Gunners. And you could probably argue that maybe one of our saving graces tonight was actually that he didn't take a chance that presented itself in the first half. Now, I saw the replay, and at the time, I felt that El Arabi was probably just offside. But the fact that the ball didn't end up in the back of the net meant that it was not checked by the VAR. And I could be wrong on that, and I'd happily be corrected. But I felt that he maybe just strayed slightly offside there, Youssef El Arabi. So it was shocking defending from Arsenal to allow him in the first place. But once he got in, he didn't take advantage. But as I say, I think it probably was just about offside. Mikel Arteta made some changes tonight, and we talked about it earlier on today, and I perhaps naively felt that that Arsenal would be able to rotate the way they did, make five, I think it was five changes from the game against Spurs, and be okay. But actually, it shone a light on the fact that, yeah, we might be able to get away with rotation sometimes in certain situations, but not on the continent, not in European competition, and not against sides as good as Olympiacos. And I listen, they will get a lot of criticism because of the fact that they're out, right? But I think they actually deserve a hell of a lot of praise. And I think it would be wrong of us as Arsenal fans not to recognise that although we weren't very good tonight, Olympiacos were. They changed their system. They changed shape from the side that played us in the first leg. They went with two wing backs. They went with a back three. Yan and Villa moved back into the midfield for them, which I thought made a big difference. Camara was very good again, buzzing around the pitch all the time, looking to make things happen. And El Arabi's a pretty decent striker. So yeah, I think that you've got to give Olympiacos as much credit as you're going to give Arsenal criticism off the back of that. It's another win for them at the Emirates Stadium. I think it might be their third in a row, which is some mean feat, you know, credit to them. As I always say, whenever we meet them, I'd love them to do well. I always want them to do well. I always want all the Greek sides to do well, unless they're playing against Arsenal. So unfortunately, I was unable to give them any support this time around. But we talk about the team that Mikel Arteta picked, and I talked about Bellerin coming back in. I talked about the possibility of Pablo Mari coming in, but he didn't. Gabriel continued at centre-back. And then we moved a little bit further forward into the midfield. And that was the bit that got me a little bit. When I say got me, I mean took me by surprise. I looked at that midfield where Mikel Arteta named the team, and I couldn't quite work out what the actual shape was going to be. In my head, prior to kickoff, I toyed with the idea of Danny Ceballos being asked to move into a more advanced position. And I kept thinking, but he just doesn't work in that area of the pitch. He just doesn't. It's just not him. You know, he's not suited to it. And I wondered and I wondered and I wondered if that was actually going to be the case. And when the game started, it was clearly it was clear that that was what Mikel Arteta had intended. He'd intended Mohamed Elneny to sit alongside Granit Xhaka in the middle of the park and allow Danny Ceballos to play in that more advanced role. And I thought there were glimpses of good things from Danny Ceballos. For example, the pass he played through to Nicola Pepe for that chance where he sort of went past the goalkeeper and tried to squeeze it in. I thought for that, you know, Danny Ceballos did very well. He took one early touch. He had the presence of mind, had the vision, knew that Pepe was on his bike and played the pass very quickly and incisively and got Arsenal in behind. But I still, you know, I come away from that game and I don't think that that role suits him at all. And I think the biggest indicator of that is that when he was substituted, and obviously he lost the ball for Olympiacos' goal, and he'll get a lot of stick for that because he's done it in both legs. And I get that. Although tonight, I thought he was more culpable, far more culpable than he was in Piraeus, because in the first leg, we've discussed it at length. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but Bern Leno, in my opinion, was at fault that time around. So now you're looking at Danny Ceballos tonight. And as I say, I think the biggest indication of the fact that he is not a number 10, he is not an advanced midfield player, was the fact that when Martin Odegaard came on, we suddenly had a fluency to our game. We suddenly moved the ball quicker. We were suddenly a lot more effective in the final third, even if we didn't take the opportunities that came our way. So I think what we've seen tonight is that you can't rotate that heavily against the side of the quality of Olympiacos and get away with it. And I think that, you know, It's probably a bit of a reminder, because I talked about competition in certain positions. I talked about the fact that that competition has been healthy and it's seen Arsenal go up a level. And I do think it has. But then you look at some of those players that came in, right? The Danny Ceballoses, the Mohamed Elnenys, the Nicola Pepes even. You look at those guys and you think sometimes they're good enough. but sometimes isn't good enough at this level. Sometimes is not acceptable. You can't rely on someone who only performs sometimes. You need your players to be consistent in terms of their level of performance. And we talked about Pepe, for example, and I've mentioned Elneny and Sabaz and a couple of others. And what though all of those players have done at various points in the season is shown us that they can do a job on any given day, but they can also be a liability on other days. And I thought that was the case tonight. I've talked about Sabaz a little bit already. I don't want to completely, you know, lay into the guy, ruin the guy, because I do feel like he was played out of position. But Mohamed Elneny gave us a reminder today that he's indeed not the Egyptian Pirlo. And I may have got a little bit carried away when he smashed one in from 20 yards last week. But yeah, you know, it's just a reminder, isn't it, that we do need upgrades in certain positions. And look, we can make changes, but we can't make so many changes and expect to be at the same level. And we saw it in the FA Cup and we've seen it again tonight. So for those who have wondered why Mikel Arteta has been reluctant to tweak the team, has been reluctant to bring other players in, has been reluctant to make changes, and we talk about the lack of game time certain individuals are not getting, well, there was your evidence as to why he probably feels like he can't mess around with the team too much. We talk about those players and you know, granted, you know, it's not, I say it again, it's not me digging them out. Well, I think we've all known for a long, long time that none of those guys in particular are good enough to represent the Arsenal moving forward and should be part of the first team going forward. But one player who really disappointed me tonight was Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. And we talked a lot about the incident that took place at the weekend where Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang was dropped from the side to face Spurs in the North London derby because of a disciplinary issue. We know that disciplinary issue was him turning up late. We know that he had the right hump about it. We know that he drove off after the game. And so for me, you know, he had to come in and prove himself tonight. And Mikel Arteta said that there was a line drawn under the incident. He brought Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang back into the side. And what did we get from Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang tonight? I thought we got a disinterested Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. And that what really frustrated me. I thought he lacked quality in the key moments. He missed a number of very, very good opportunities. In particular, the one where he raced through on goal after Martin Odegaard had slipped him in the dying stages of the game and tried a chip over Jose Sarr. Which ended up going well wide of the far post. I was disappointed with a couple of other moments that he had. There was one where he tried an acrobatic volley from inside the six-yard box and he completely messed it up. So I was disappointed with not only his outputs tonight, but I was disappointed with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's attitude. He doesn't press. He's the only one in the team that doesn't press. And you can see how much more effective the press is from Arsenal as a unit when Alexander Lacazette plays up front. And that's what's really, really frustrating, because the thing that you would have, that would have made you put Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang ahead of Lacazette every time was the fact that he was clinical in front of goal and Alexander Lacazette traditionally hasn't been. But now neither of them are particularly clinical, and one gives loads of work rate and loads of effort and loads of passion and loads of desire to the team. And the other one turned up late for the North London derby and was, I thought, very, very disappointing tonight. So, you know, that's my frustration with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. And, you know, there was a little incident, and I can't be, you know, I can't be 100% sure that this is what went on, but, and feel free to let me know in the chat if you think something different occurred. But there was an incident involving Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang where he had a little go at one of his teammates. And I don't normally mind that, right? Normally, I don't mind players exchanging strong views on the football pitch. We've all played football. We've all done it. I was like that. You know, I couldn't keep my mouth shut on the football pitch, particularly when I was dealing with opponents. But I guess that maybe stems, you know, these little angry exchanges perhaps stem from the fact that some of his teammates have, you know, have been very disappointed by what their captain did at the weekend. You know, and for me, look, I said it before, and I'll say it again. The issue of Aubameyang coming late on the weekend, there could have been a genuine reason, right? There could have been traffic. There could have been this. There could have been that. We've all had it, right? Where we've gone to go somewhere. We've got stuck in traffic. We've ended up being late. And then you get the classic line of, oh, well, you should have turned, you should have left earlier. But you don't anticipate these things happening. But for me, where you can really tell is how that person responds to that. Hold your hands up. Apologize. Don't be in a shop. Don't drive off. Don't refuse to partake in the post-match warm down. I thought that was really poor from Aubameyang, and I thought that that was really disappointing from a captain. And so, yeah, I was obviously frustrated by that. But I think that what happened then has maybe had a little bit of a knock-on effect into some of the way some of his teammates are responding to him. I think it was Granit Xhaka with whom he exchanged some words. You know, and for me, you know, one might have dragged us through the mud at various points in his Arsenal career. One may have been the reason we've been in the mud at various points in his Arsenal career. But ultimately, attitude is everything. And Mikel Arteta has made it clear that he's not going to accept any bullshit from anybody. He dropped our captain ahead of the North London Derby, for God's sake. So I just wonder how that situation's going to develop. Mikel Arteta was asked about it in the post-match press conference. He was asked if he felt that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang was still bothered or was still thinking about what happened at the weekend. And he reiterated the point that there's been a line drawn under it, and he hopes that that isn't the case. So, I just wonder if that incident in particular has led to some players getting increasingly frustrated with him. Not just because of that, because he's also missing chances as well. You've all seen that clip going around of Kieran Tierney talking about the need for Arsenal to put their chances in the back of the net. And he's absolutely right. He's spot on. But I think the combination of Aubameyang's inefficiency in front of goal right now, as well as what can be perceived by many as being a bit of a lack of desire, lack of caring, and a bit of a bad attitude, if I'm being quite honest. I think the combination of those things is going to lead to some standoffs in the dressing room and maybe behind the scenes. And I don't like the idea of our captain acting the way he is captain, the way he is acting. Sorry. Mr. 142 says, you're trying to create an agenda. I'm absolutely not trying to create an agenda. This channel is built on me sharing my opinions on all things Arsenal, exchanging those opinions with you guys, taking your thoughts in the live chat, taking your questions, answering them to the best of my ability. It's not about creating an agenda. It's about an Arsenal fan, somebody who cares deeply about the football club, watching somebody who has had the honour bestowed upon him of wearing the captain's armband of this great football club. And at this moment, doesn't seem committed. That's how it feels. And it's over to Aubameyang to prove it wrong. You know, it's over to Aubameyang to prove us all wrong, because he didn't bother turning up on time for our biggest game of the season. And tonight he looked very, very disinterested. Now, that's not to say that the rest of the team were good and don't deserve any stick. Of course they do. They absolutely do, because they were below par in every sense of the word tonight. We didn't move the ball quick enough. We didn't move the ball sharp enough. We were sloppy in possession time and time again, giving the ball away in key areas, getting into the final third and failing to pick out the final pass. And when we did manage to pick out the final pass, we struggled to put the ball in the back of the net. We struggled to apply the final finish. And Arsenal were very below par. Mikel Arteta, after Olympiacos scored their goal, decided to take action. And we said it during the live watch along, didn't we? Here comes the cavalry. Because he felt like Arsenal were unable to control the midfield. And there were gaping holes. And Olympiacos were able to progress the ball forward. And you saw it. Dani Ceballos, who was supposed to be Arsenal's most advanced midfielder tonight, lost the ball. And with one pass, Youssef El Arabi was inside our penalty area and able to attack David Luiz and Gabriel. And he got his shot off. it took a kind deflection for him and found its way into the back of the net. So Mikel Arteta would have been worried about that. There was a lack of stability. There really, really was. And I guess, I mean, he made the changes, which I thought were the right changes, by the way. In particular, Martin Odegaard, who came on and just knitted everything together for us. He moved the ball really quickly, really incisively. Actually missed a really good chance of his own as well. But he just made things happen, Martin Odegaard. He just added some quality into that position. And I thought you could tell immediately that there was a step up in Arsenal's midfield in terms of the ability when Martin Odegaard come on. Thomas Partey gave us a presence I felt was better than Mohamed Elneny had been. But even still, and a lot of people have criticised me for saying that I don't feel we're seeing the best Thomas Partey right now. I don't think he is 100% fit. And I've had quite a bit of stick about that over the last 48 hours or so. I still didn't think he looked great tonight. You know, he came on and he was an upgrade on Mohamed Elneny. But when Mohamed Elneny plays like he played tonight, then, you know, there are very few players that wouldn't be an upgrade on him. But I just felt with Thomas Partey tonight that he was a little bit sloppy in possession, got caught on the ball a couple of times, and has this horrible, horrible knack of giving away dangerous free kicks on the edge of our penalty area. And we could have got punished for those. So it's not to dig out Thomas Partey, because as I said, I thought overall the introduction of he and Martin Odegaard actually improved Arsenal, elevated us to another level, a level from which we could comfortably see out the rest of the game. It wasn't a level at which we were going to blow Olympiacos away, but it was a level at which we would be able to hold on and get a result that would see us progress into the last eight of the Europa League. So I felt like those two, that they made a difference, but I'm still not 100% convinced that we're seeing anything like the best Thomas Partey there could be. A couple of other players that disappointed me as well. And look, I feel like I'm going on about negatives because the performance tonight and the result tonight wasn't good. But I did say right at the top of the show, if you're joining us a little bit late, these are observations off the back of this football match, but ultimately we're through and I'm delighted about that. And I appreciate that off nights happen and I appreciate that we're now through and we need to worry about the next round. I'll carry on anyway. But I was also disappointed with Nicola Pepe tonight. Thought he got into some really, really good positions. Couldn't believe that he didn't square that ball to Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. They didn't get his head up and play the ball across the penalty area, having gone past Jose Sarr. I know his effort trickled just wide of the post, but I still feel like the best option would have been to pick out Aubameyang in the middle. I thought David Luiz didn't look quite as solid and quite as formidable as he has done in recent weeks this evening. So that was another one I wasn't majorly impressed with tonight. I was impressed with Gabriel Martinelli when he came on, worked very hard. Ran channels, closed people down, won the ball back for Arsenal on numerous occasions high up the pitch, set the tone really for the press around him. So, liked his performance. Mikel Arteta's been talking about the fact that his omission or him being left out of the side is not his fault. He is training well. His attitude is right. And Mikel's been very impressed with that. But it's been his decision up until now to leave him out. And I talked about the fact that that was probably largely due to Pepe and Willian playing well. But Pepe didn't play very well tonight. And Willian has an injury. So perhaps Martinelli's opportunity is on the horizon. And fingers crossed he takes it because he's a player I really, really like. Get your questions into the live chat. Don't forget, if you haven't already, make sure you smash the like button. It's so, so important. Hit the like button on the videos. Check out manscaped.com where you can enter our discount code 90min20 to get 20% off of your order as well as worldwide shipping for free. And also, if you're interested in becoming a member of the channel and supporting me to bring you more content and of a higher quality, then please do click on the link in the description. I'd love to have you guys on board. while you guys get your questions in the live chat, questions, comments, whatever you want, fill up that chat box. I'm coming to it in just a moment. But we've got to talk about Spurs. We've got to talk about Spurs. I mean, look, I came away from the Arsenal game, obviously pleased that we'd qualified for the last eight, but disappointed by what I'd watched tonight, disappointed by the performance tonight. And then you go in and see something like that. And you know, was it Orsic, the lad from Dinamo Zagreb, who scored a hat-trick on the night, dumped Tottenham out of the Europa League, and Mourinho's interview after the game. Just, you don't even have to listen to it. You can tune out of it and literally just watch his face. That is a beaten man. He knows that was a shocking result. Glenn Hoddle on BT Sport described it as disastrous and diabolical. And that is exactly what it is. That is exactly what it is. It was a really, really poor night for Tottenham Hotspur, but one that we were delighted to see. And I tweeted it straight after the game finished. Because obviously I was on the Arsenal game, right? I only caught the I only managed to catch the extra time. But the way my heart was racing every time Spurs attacked in that last few minutes, and every time Dinamo made those huge clearances and the goalkeeper made a number of saves, it just reminded me of how much I can't stand Spurs. So yeah, look, really, really disastrous night for them. Great night for us. We progress. They go out. And I get, look, aside from the whole tribal thing and laughing and bantering at Tottenham, I'm delighted they're out, mainly because I see them as one of the teams that I didn't want to face. You know, they've got lots of quality players. Jose Mourinho has had a number over Arsenal for many, many years. It's not so prevalent under Mikel Arteta, I don't think. I think that when they have beaten us, it's been through finer margins. So I don't really, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is, for me, whilst I didn't think that Tottenham were impossible opponents to defeat, they're one of the better sides on paper in this competition. So for them to go out obviously hands our chances of continuing on and hopefully winning the Europa League, it sees our chances increase. So, you know, it can only be a good thing. Aside from having a good laugh and a joke and being able to wind up all our mates and football Twitter this evening, as some of you were talking about in the Discord server, is an absolute delight this evening. Right, let's go over to the live chat box and take some of your questions, some of your comments. The Arsenal Lounge. Big hello to the Arsenal Lounge. Make sure you head over and subscribe to the Arsenal Lounge channel. It's a really, really good channel. And he says, Ella, there we are through. Can Manscaped handle a Cypriot bush? I will neither confirm nor deny. I'm not going to answer that. This is PG, man. This is PG. big hello to Craig Scott. How you doing, man? Check out the Same Old Arsenal podcast as well. Make sure you head over there. Give them a subscribe. Follow them on Twitter. Give Craig a follow as well, and make sure that you're supporting the Same Old Arsenal podcast. Brilliant show with brilliant guests every single week. Fantastic stuff. And Craig's been a great help to me over the years and gave me an opportunity when I was really fresh in podcasting to jump on the Same Old Arsenal and help the guys. And it's been a great experience, and I really enjoy chatting with them week to week. I haven't been able to make the last couple just because of work commitments, but I'm looking forward to getting back on there and educating Dan Potts and Lee Judges on the sport that we all love. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, check out the Same Old Arsenal. Ian says, question, by looking at the last 10 minutes versus Spurs today and the match against Burnley, whom do you feel comfortable facing in the quarterfinals? I think that an in-form Arsenal on their day can beat anybody left in this competition. I really do think that. But what I do think is you can't rotate as heavily as we did. You can't afford to gift people goals because there are good teams in the competition. But I guess from my perspective, I'm not majorly scared of anyone. I'm more scared of us either not turning up or hitting that self-destruct button. That is my biggest fear with this Arsenal side right now. Rather than it being, I don't want to face them or I don't want to face them, It feels to me like Arsenal will be our own downfall and nobody else. So I'm not majorly worried. Obviously, there's teams I'd prefer. Look, I mean, I wouldn't mind facing Granada. I mean, Ajax went through convincingly. Villarreal, I don't want to face with Unai Emery. I gave him so much criticism. The last thing I need is Unai Emery dumping us out. Don't want to face United. Don't particularly fancy Roma. I wouldn't mind Dinamo Zagreb. I think that one's winnable. But, you know, it's a difficult question to answer. Just to quickly remind, if in case you haven't caught up with the football tonight, the teams in the last eight in tomorrow's draw are Ajax, Villarreal, Man United, Slavia Prague, Roma, Granada, Dinamo Zagreb, and of course Arsenal. Remember, Slavia Prague as well went to Rangers tonight, who many people thought were going to get through that tie, and pulled off a victory there and went through. So this Europa League is difficult. It's a lot more difficult than people think, and it's a lot more difficult than people would have you believe. But I don't look at that draw and go, oh, I definitely, absolutely, categorically don't want this team. When it comes to Man United, that's probably the one I want the least. Purely because I don't fancy playing Man United over two legs. So we hope that someone else can do the business for us against United. Or if we do have to face them, I'd rather face them in a one-off than over two legs. Dave Atkinson says, Harry, what is the phone number for the Samaritans? Because listening to you tonight, I feel like we have gone out. I did say, Dave, and I don't know if you caught the very beginning of the show, that there were some individual performances that I wasn't happy with. There were some points I was going to pull up about Arsenal's performance. But ultimately, and first and foremost, I'm delighted that Arsenal have qualified for the last eight of the Europa League. That was the first thing I said at the top of the podcast. You might have missed it. You might have jumped on a little bit late. But believe me, if Arsenal had crashed out tonight, you'd have seen a completely different me. I'm not sure I'd have even been able to face doing a live stream because I'd just be effing and blinded for the best part of an hour. So, yeah, believe me, this is a happy Harry talking about some issues in the team that have I'm not going to say bothered me, have disappointed me, but ultimately I can get over and put to one side because all that matters is that Arsenal are in the last eight. Saeed Abdullah says, when you see how many chances we're missing every game this season, do you think the priority this summer should be signing a striker? I think the priority should be to sign a striker if, as we're led to believe, the club are considering selling Alexander Lacazette this summer. I would even, and I know that there was a question put a little bit earlier on by Craig, where he said, would you cash in on Aubameyang if the right offer came in? Yeah, I would. Because I just don't see any of them as being the long-term future of Arsenal anymore. And I talked about this during the watch-along. I said that although last summer I was very big on the whole need, I guess, to tie Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang down to a contract. At the time, I thought it was because he had to play every single week. Admittedly, at the time, that's how I felt. I felt like he was that good. It was that important to this side that he was so formidable, so key, so impactful that he had to play every single game. And now in hindsight, I'm not saying he shouldn't play. I still think he's good enough to warrant a place in the Arsenal side more often than not. I just feel like it was equally as important that we did it. And I'm still delighted that we did it, but for slightly different reasons. And those different reasons are that we could now sell the player. We couldn't do that before because his contract was going to run out and we'd have stood to lose out on a lot of money potentially. So if we're going to keep him, if he's going to continue scoring goals and be an asset and help the team and sort his head out, because it seems like this season there's been a lot of issues with Aubameyang. You know, we talked about the three disciplinary issues, the turning up late, the tattoo thing, and then, of course, missing the COVID test. And then in between all of that, he's had to deal with his mother being unwell. So I appreciate that this could just be an off season for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. And I'd hope that he'd get back on the right track. And if he does, then he's more than welcome in my eyes to remain at the football club and remain the captain as well. But I would cash in on on both of them, if I'm honest, if the right money came in. And a striker does need to come in, someone who fits the mould a little bit better of what Mikel Arteta wants to do, because I'm not sure that Lacazette is quite the right player. I know he gives, we always talk about what he gives off the ball, and he certainly gives that. But when I look at Aubameyang, I think he's definitely not the type of player that Mikel Arteta wants or thinks about having in an ideal world. I think that he's someone that was at the club when he arrived. He recognised his importance very early on to the side and how any success he would have, seen as he wasn't going to be given 50, 60 million pounds to go and buy another striker, was going to be dependent on how well Aubameyang could do and how he could get the best out of him. So I get it all. I just think if the money comes across the table, cash in. And yeah, I would like to see Arsenal in the market for a striker. I really would. Apologies if I missed some of your questions, because the chat is always updating, as I always say. So I will try my best to pick up as many as I possibly can. lots of you talking about my little mini Xhaka model, and that's why we didn't win, because apparently I didn't kiss it before the game. I did. You're right, I didn't kiss it. I did have it on the desk next to me, though. Big hello to Jashar, who says, you've got the big guns in the chat. Big up the Arsenal Lounge and Craig. Yes, indeed. Let's see what else we've got here. I kind of answered this one already, but I'll touch on it again. Would you rather play United in the next round or in the final? I don't want to play United at all, if I'm honest, but I don't like the idea of playing United over two legs. So maybe the final. I hate saying that as well, but I don't want to play them over two legs. The internet idiot says, what do you value Ober at, Harry? 30 mil, 35? Because of his age, right? You've got to take into consideration his age. It's a massive factor. 35 to pushing 40 million, maybe, is what I would probably value him at now. Let's see what else we've got in the live chat. lots of comments about Tottenham. Dave Hills says, it seems to me if we don't play our very strongest side, we're not good enough. And I think that's absolutely right. I think you've hit the nail on the head, because when we rotate at this level, it is a problem. And we've seen it already this season, and we saw it again tonight. And I go back to what I said earlier on. It's not because we don't have enough players in terms of the volume, in terms of the number of players. It's because some of those players can be dazzling on one day. Your Nicola Pepes, your Danny Ceballos is prime examples of that. They can be dazzling one week and they can be horrendous the week after. And that is why you can't keep bringing these guys into the team, because you simply cannot trust in them to perform to a certain level every single time. Quick reminder, if you haven't already, hit the like button. There's over 300 of you watching us right now live across the multiple platform. And fingers crossed, there'll be thousands to watch after on the replay and listen via the audio. If you are listening via the audio, make sure you leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you consume the content from. Big hello to Tziziki, who's an Olympiakos fan. And says, Olympiakos fan here, do you believe with fans in the stadium, the result would have been different? Congratulations, by the way. Do I think it would have been different? Not really. I still think Arsenal would have gone through. But I think that, obviously, it would have been tougher for Arsenal to get the result they did in the Karaiskaki Stadium in front of that packed Partizan crowd. I was there last season, so I know exactly how intimidating it can be. So I do think it would have made it a little bit more difficult. And I do think that actually tonight, when Arsenal conceded that first goal, you'd have got the Emirates crowd getting on the team's back and making it difficult for them and expressing their frustrations and disappointments at the way Arsenal were playing. And that creates like a toxic atmosphere that is never helpful. Anyone who's been to the Emirates in the last 5-6 years would have experienced that at some point or another. So I still think Arsenal would have gone through, But I do think it would have had an impact on the overall result. You know, maybe it would have been closer. I don't know, but yeah, I do think it played some part, the fact that there were no fans. Right, let me go back over to the live chat and see if there is anything else we're going to touch on. I did see one, and it's just completely disappeared from my screen. Where is it? Just trying to scroll back up. Thomas says, we're very quick in resigning on Oba. A bit neurotic, isn't it? I believe in Mikel's ability to rebuild him. Sometimes the therapy is tough and needs time. Don't give up. Yeah, look. I'd have said the same thing before tonight about Aubameyang, that if the right money was on the table, then you consider taking it because of his age, you know. Not just because of his age, but because I don't necessarily feel like he fits 100% into the centre forward position in the system that Mikel Arteta wants to play. And sometimes things just don't fit, right? You can't put square pegs in round holes all your life. Arsenal did that for many, many years under Arsene Wenger, and it didn't work. And I think that that Aubameyang, as great as he is, as good as he has been, and as good as he could still be, just doesn't complement the system quite right. And you can kind of, when he's clinical in front of goal, you look at it and you go, well, he doesn't give us this off of the ball. He doesn't give us this in the build-up. He doesn't give us this in the transition. But what he does do is he scores shitloads of goals. And, you know, on the face of it, it feels like Aubameyang's had a really disappointing season this time around. I think he's scored 14 goals in 30 appearances now for Arsenal this season, which is by no stretch of the imagination terrible. But it's not the Aubameyang that we've come to know and love. And that's why I think people are having a bit of a hard time processing it at the moment. Big thank you to Dramatic12 for your very kind super chat donation. He says, do you think Pepe didn't play as well as he does because of Bellerin behind him? And he says, always supporting from Houston, Texas. Dramatic, thank you very much. Big hello to everybody joining us from the United States, from across the pond, and in particular, Houston, Texas right now. There's a lot of talk about that, isn't there? That Bellerin and Pepe don't really complement each other. And to a degree, I agree with that. And as I said to you guys on the stream earlier on today, there is a members video. So for our gold members and above, there's a piece of content dropping tomorrow that goes into detail about Hector Bellerin's role in the side and what he's tactically being asked to do and why maybe it's not quite working with Nicolas Pepe. So that's one of the things that I focused on in that video. So I don't really want to give away all the answers, but I do think that there is something in that. I do think that they just don't necessarily complement one another the way, for argument's sake, Cedric and Nicolas Pepe do. So yeah, there is definitely something in that. Thank you for your very, very kind donation, man. Really, really appreciate it. So quick recap. Arsenal are through to the last eight of the UEFA Europa League. In the draw, they could face Ajax, Villarreal, Manchester United, Slavia Prague, Roma, Granada, or Dinamo Zagreb. Tottenham went crashing out despite going into their second leg against Dinamo Zagreb, who, by the way, their manager had to resign because he's been sentenced to prison just last week. You know, they're in a mess. They're in absolute shambles at the moment with everything that's going on. Yet somehow Tottenham managed to blow a commanding lead from the first leg, in which they conceded zero away goals by losing 3-0 on the night to Dinamo Zagreb. So Spurs are out. Manchester United, however, are through. And Paul Pogba scored the decisive goal in the San Siro. Tomorrow, we're going to be bringing you more Arsenal content. Of course, we're going to be bringing you reaction to the draw at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And joining me will be Kostas Llanos once again. Lots of you have been singing his praises. Lots of you have enjoyed his appearances on the podcast, talking about the two legs against Olympiacos. We'll chat a little bit about the game on Thursday night, but we will mainly be focusing on that Europa League draw. Gostas's knowledge of European football is fantastic, and that's why he's the best man to join me for that one. So I'm very much looking forward to that. So turn your notifications on if you haven't already. Make sure you subscribe already if you haven't as well. Big thank you to Ilka for your very kind donation as well. And Ilka says, hit the like if you hate Tottenham. Yes, make sure you do. Don't forget to check out manscaped.com. Enter our discount code 90min20 to get 20% off. Check out our membership scheme. Click on the link in the description. And if you're interested, we'd love to have you on board. I'm going to call it a day because it's been a long day. Always is when Arsenal are playing, but I wouldn't change it for the world, especially when we secure our place in the last eight of a major European tournament. I'll be back tomorrow, Friday, a little bit later on today if you're listening via the audio. So until then, ciao.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.